Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
Today, for another of my special lockdown life stories, my guest is Hannah Murray, who, as many of you will know, is one of the anchor presenters on Talk Radio Europe. Hannah hosts The Breakfast Show and The Book Show on TRE and has many more strings to her bow besides. Hannah, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you, Ian. It's a real pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, obviously, I have to ask you, in these strange times, how are you bearing up under the lockdown?
Yeah, they are strange, aren't they? It's a really weird situation to be in. I've never experienced anything remotely like this. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same. I luckily am continuing to go to work and to still do my job on the radio, both The Breakfast Show live and recording interviews for The Book Show as well. And I'm really thankful for that because my husband has been working from home. So his sort of excitement every few days is to take the rubbish out.
I've seen the photograph.
Yes. I mean, people who, you know, generally aren't going to work and are only leaving the house in order to go to the pharmacy or the supermarket or to take the rubbish out after 8 o'clock at night. I really feel for them because, you know, it's not much fun, is it?
It's not much fun. And I don't think you appreciate it until you're in the situation. I mean, it's very different from being at home on your own and enjoying your own company. But when it's enforced and you realise that you know a lot of your liberty is restricted, it's a very different feeling.
Yes, absolutely. To not have the choice, to not have the freedom that we're all used to is very weird, you know, especially living in such a beautiful place. You know, those of us lucky enough to live near the sea or maybe up in the mountains, you know, lots of beautiful walks, opportunities to go and look at our beautiful surroundings. Suddenly we can't do that. Yeah. And it's not nice.
Anyway, let's get back to sort of, you know, real life and what's going to happen beyond. So I mentioned, Hannah, in the introduction that you've got many strings to your bow. So as well as Talk Radio Europe, what else do you do down on the Costa del Sol there?
Well, I've been hosting a quiz, actually, a weekly quiz at the Hogan Stand Irish pub in San Pedro for nearly 11 years.
I mean, that's quite an extraordinary achievement.
Yes, it really is. It's quite unbelievable. Last August, we celebrated the 10-year anniversary and can't believe it's been going on that long. But people love quizzing. I mean, I do. I've kind of grown up loving quizzing. My parents have always loved quizzes and we used to watch quiz shows as a family and play Scrabble together and things like that. And my dad used to test me on capital cities in car journeys. And so I've kind of been brought up in that sort of environment. I don't want people to think that I'm really, really good at quizzing. Often when I end up playing a quiz, when somebody else hosts, everybody thinks, oh, you know, Hannah's obviously going to win. Often I don't, which is always a bit embarrassing. But no, it's great fun. So I've been hosting these weekly quizzes for nearly 11 years. I also, along with my husband and a design company that have been here for many years on the coast, Manifesto, we run the San Pedro Guide, which is the only English online guide to San Pedro. And we started that a couple of years ago because often we were walking through San Pedro and there'd be a concert on or something would be happening. And we'd say, hey, we didn't know about this. Why isn't anyone telling us about these events? So we decided to be that source of information ourselves. So that's really fun.
And the plastic challenge, does that go sort of hand in hand with the San Pedro Guide, or is it something very separate? I mean, how do you galvanize people when it comes to sort of organizing a group of people to use less plastic and find alternatives? How has that come about?
Yeah, the plastic challenge. I mean, obviously, people are really more and more conscious, or should be more and more conscious, certainly in the last year or so, I would say, definitely. We've seen a rise in people talking about the environment a lot more and being a lot more aware of how much plastic they use and single-use plastics, trying to use less and less of that. A lot of supermarkets now are using less plastic in their packaging, which is fantastic. Obviously, the idea of having a bag for life has been around for many years now. Instead of, you know, taking six plastic bags out of a supermarket each time you go and then chucking them away when you get home. So the idea has been around a while, and it's something that we're passionate about and have been trying to make a lot of changes in our own life at home. And just thought it would be interesting to kind of get the information out there and also share and sell some alternative things that people can buy, you know, like straws made of bamboo or different materials. You can get them made of glass and metal and all kinds of different things. And also the Hessian bags as well. We take to the supermarket these little Hessian bags to put fruit and vegetables in, instead of getting those little plastic thin bags that you chuck away as soon as you get home. So yeah, the alternatives are out there, and it's just kind of making people aware of it, really.
Yeah. Hannah, I ask all of my guests to choose six pieces of music that best represent periods in their life stories. Music that evokes a strong memory, perhaps, or marks a significant moment in their lives. What would be your first piece, and why have you chosen this?
My first piece is a Peter Gabriel song. It was the first concert that I went to, Peter Gabriel, with my mum and dad. And I've always loved music and grew up listening to the music that they liked, which I still like now. I'm a big kind of Beatles fan, and that came from my parents. But Peter Gabriel, because it was the first concert that I went to, it always kind of sticks out in your mind, I think, live music when you've seen an artist live. And he is one of my favorite artists, not just as a musician, but as a person. He does amazing things. So I've chosen Peter Gabriel and That Voice Again from his album So.
There must be more than this. It's only an uncertainty that we're naked and alive. Hear it through the rattle of a streetcar. Hear it through the things you said. I can get so scared. Listen to the wind. So far apart, only love can make.
Hannah Murray is my guest today, sharing her life story. Hannah hosts both the breakfast show and the book show on Talk Radio Europe, and has many other interests to keep her more than occupied. Hannah and her husband live not far from the TRE studios on the Costa del Sol. So, Hannah, I want to delve a little bit more into the programmes that you host on TRE, starting with the book show, if we may, because this is a subject close to my heart. I love books, and I would love to know, you know, how you operate on the book show, who your guests are, what you talk about, and I suppose some of your highlights.
Yes, the book show I've been very lucky to host for, I think, well, definitely it's been over 10 years. I think we're pushing 13 years now of the book show, which is, yeah, amazing. And in that time, I've interviewed thousands of authors. And what I love about the book show is that most people, I would imagine, read at some point or another. I mean, some more than others, obviously. So everybody can relate to the idea of reading a book. And it's one of those sayings, a lot of people feel like they have a book in them, at least one. You know, one day I'll write a book. Now, by the way, I think is the perfect time to write a book. Whilst we're going through this quarantine period, people do have a lot more time. So get on with it if you're thinking about writing a book. But I find it fascinating how everybody does it so differently. There's no kind of hard and fast rules into how you should write a book and how you shouldn't. Some people think there are. You know, when I speak to authors, sometimes people say, oh, well, obviously everybody does it like this, or of course this is the way that you're supposed to do it. And I often say, well, interestingly not. That's everybody does it differently. So that, for one, I think is fascinating, to speak to different authors and ask them about their process, whether they plan or not, whether that, how much time they spend on the characters, whether they know what's going to happen at the end before they start writing the beginning, whether they even write the book in order at all. Some people start at the end. Some people write it in shorthand first. Some people go straight onto the computer. I remember Jeffrey Archer always saying he loves to feel the pen in his hand. He always writes his books with a pen. And then has someone who will type it up on the computer for him afterwards.
And a lot of people, a lot of authors always say that their first book particularly has a very strong autobiographical element. And again, is that a theme that recurs in with the authors that you've chatted to?
Yeah, often that can be the case. But again, not always. I mean, people say write what you know. But I was talking to an author quite recently who said, it doesn't always have to be write what you know. Sometimes it's a case of write what you love. And research is so, so key when writing a book. You know, you, as a reader of books, there's nothing worse than reading about a subject that you know something about, and clearly the person who's written the book don't know as much about it as you do. You know, you don't want to be thinking, I can't believe they've just said that's how a radio station works, and you're reading it going, that would never happen in a radio station, that doesn't make sense. So making sure that you're writing correctly is really important, definitely.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, I think part of the one of the things that motivates you and keeps you going with the book show is when somebody gives you feedback and says, what a great question, I've never been asked that before. How, as the host of the book show after so many years, do you keep fresh, and how do you find new angles to present?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really aware of or really conscious of trying not to ask the same old questions over and over again. Obviously, when you're interviewing people about different subjects, different things come up. But obviously, with the book show and talking to people about the process of writing books, invariably the same sorts of questions are going to come about quite regularly. So I'm really keen to get different angles in there. And that happened today, bizarrely, an interview I recorded today. And the lady said, wow, that's a really interesting question. And it really made her think. And you kind of go, yes, you know, it's fun when that happens, especially when you're interviewing people who are so used to being interviewed, you know, the likes of Jeffrey Archer, you know, people, it's just a machine and they just know exactly what they're saying and how to do it. But yeah, it's always fun and a challenge, I think, as a presenter, to really think outside the box and make your guests think sometimes when they're answering questions.
Yeah. Now, the breakfast show obviously is a very different kettle of fish because it's live. So how do you, is it difficult to make the transition? Do you sometimes forget which show you're presenting?
Thankfully not. I don't forget. No. I mean, I used to do the book show live many years ago. So I have done that live, and I really do enjoy doing live interviews, to be honest. I think that adds something. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what, but it adds something to the interview doing it live. I guess the idea that you know that you either you can't make a mistake, or if you do, there's nothing you can do about it. So you just have to carry on. But no, with the breakfast show, it's very different because it's a lot of news. You know, I do one interview a day normally during the show, and then the rest of the time it's news that can only be prepped on that day, the sports news, the entertainment, finance, the newspapers, what's happening in the UK, and then a mixture of music as well. And it's great fun. I mean, it's a great show to do, and it's nice when the listeners get involved and you get to sort of meet people over the airwaves as well.
Yeah. Time for your second piece of music, Hannah. What have you chosen for your second piece?
I have chosen a song called Nothing from a chorus line, which is my favourite musical. I did performing arts at college, and I did a chorus line as well when I was 17. And this is one of my favourite songs from a musical ever.
And I said, was absurd. But I said to myself, hey, it's only the first week. Maybe it's genetic. They don't have bobsleds in San Juan. Second week, more advanced, and we had to be a table, be a sports car, ice cream cone. Mr. Carp, he would say, very good, except I dug right down to the bottom of my soul to see how an ice cream felt. Yes, I dug right down to the bottom of my soul, and I tried to melt. The kids yelled, nothing. They called me nothing. And Carp allowed it, which really makes me burn. They were so helpful. Never. Jesus Christ. Went to church praying, Santa Maria, send me guidance. Send me guidance on my knees. Went to church praying, Santa Maria, help.
Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
You're listening to Life Stories, and my guest is Hannah Murray in something of a special Life Stories for this lockdown period. So, Hannah, obviously you've done your time at Talk Radio Europe. How did you get started there?
It was interesting. It was 2005 when I started, and I moved to Spain in 2003 and worked for a couple of real estate companies, as as a lot of people sometimes do, moving to the Costa del Sol. And I really wanted to do something different, and I didn't know what. And heard an advert randomly on the radio, and it was a lovely lady called Mary Harbo, who said, "Does anyone know anyone who's interested in getting into radio? If so, call this number." And I thought, oh, that sounds like fun. I wouldn't mind getting into radio. So I phoned the number, and she said, oh, well, why don't you pop in tomorrow for a chat? And I started the day after that, and it all happened in a sort of whirlwind 3-day period. And I remember spending ages putting my CV together, thinking, how am I going to make this sound like I'd be a good person to work in the radio? I mean, the advert wasn't even to be a presenter or anything. It was just about, you know, getting into the radio business, if you like. And Mary didn't even want to look at my CV. She was just happy to chat to me, which was nice. And yeah, I started there as her producer initially.
So had you any experience in radio at all up to that point? I know you did performing arts, which must have come in handy, but any radio work at all?
None whatsoever.
So it was a fairly steep learning curve.
Yeah, it really was. And that's what I loved about it. I was starting by getting guests for Mary and other presenters at the time. And Mary just sort of said to me, Hannah, what you've got, because I was there like as a kind of trainee, if you like, at the beginning, just sort of helping out for the summer. But I really wanted to stay on and wanted to turn it into a proper job. I was 25 at the time when I started there. And Mary said, what you've got to do is make yourself indispensable. Try and learn as much as possible in all the different departments. So, you know, the radio station kind of needs you, basically. So that's what I did. I learned how you do the recordings of interviews, how you can edit things. I learned how to use the desk. So when people were doing outside broadcasts, I could engineer the show from the studio, or I went with them on the outside broadcast and learned how to use the equipment there. So I could kind of dip in and out doing different things on different shows with different people, and was reading the weather on the afternoon show, and kind of got in that way, really.
I mean, it does sound fascinating. And I know that you, as I said, you did performing arts at college. When you're at college doing performing arts, was your idea to become an actress? Is that what your ambition was? Is that what you wanted to do?
Yes, it was at the time, definitely. I loved acting and singing and dancing. I mean, kind of all three. Out of those three, I think acting was my strongest, followed by singing, and then lastly dancing, I reckon, if I had to put them in order. But yeah, I just kind of loved performing and always had done, really, and never really knew where it was going to take me, but just liked the idea of potentially being on TV or in film. But I have to say, certainly in the last 20 years or so, I would not want to do that now. I really wouldn't. I think the idea of being famous, certainly in that sort of scale, frightens the life out of me, quite frankly.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, it's not, you do sing and you do act in on the Costa del Sol. So tell me a little bit about that. So what sort of singing do you do, and what sort of acting do you do?
Well, singing, I'm part of a great singing group called the Del Sol Singers, which is run by Karen Danzig, who is the partner of Bill Padley on TRE, Bill Padley's TRE's Bill Padley. So she runs this singing group, and there's about 15 of us, I suppose, 15 to 20. And we sing a great selection of songs. We do a lot of kind of pop songs, 70s and 80s pop songs. And we were very busy last Christmas. We had quite a few gigs, which was great. So, you know, there's lots of different events that require choirs or singing groups to maybe perform at lunches or charity dues. So we're getting a bit of a name for ourselves, and it's really great fun.
And the stage.
Yes, I'm part of ITS, the International Theatre Studio, who have been based on the Costa del Sol for over 20 years now. And they put on some great shows, two or three productions a year. They do play readings as well. And I've done, gosh, five or six plays, I think, over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. I did a couple of plays at the Salon Varieties Theatre, a great theatre in Frangarola. I did Allo Allo and Are You Being Served, which went down very well with expats. Great fun. I love doing comedy. That's what I've done pretty much until the show that we're rehearsing for at the moment, Towards Zero, we're doing at the moment, which is an Agatha Christie production, which was supposed to be being performed the last weekend in March. But because of all of this that's been going on, it's sadly been postponed. So we're still waiting to hear when it's going to be performed, because we don't know how long this is going to last. But we're still kind of going over our lines, and even had a rehearsal together on Zoom recently. So
keeping fresh. Time for your third piece of music, Hannah. What have you chosen for your third piece, and why this one?
I have chosen, going back to the choir, I've chosen a song called You're the Voice by John Farnham. And I remember it was a song that my parents had. They bought the single on vinyl, on record, when I was growing up, and loved the song. And my mum and dad knew the words and used to sing the song together in the car. And then it's a song that we've been doing with the choir. So it's like a sort of dream come true to be singing a song in the choir that you've loved for most of your life. And it's a fabulous, fabulous song.
We're all someone's daughter. We're all someone's son.
My guest this week is, for a lockdown special, Hannah Murray, who hosts both a breakfast show and a book show on Talk Radio Europe. Hannah and her husband live not that far from the TRE studios on the Costa del Sol. See, John Farnham, that track we've just heard there, Hannah, brings back memories of your family and your childhood. So let's go back in time a little bit. And where were you born and brought up?
I was born in Walthamstow, East London, and lived there till I was three. So I don't remember much at all about it. And then we moved to Harrow, North London, and lived there till I was 13. And I enjoyed being in Harrow. There were lots of friends that kind of lived around the corner, and we used to go out and play together a lot. And then we moved to Dorset, and I lived there from 13 until about 18, I suppose. And Dorset was completely different to growing up in London in so many different ways. The way people talked was one of the big things. The accent was very different. And the types of people, the people were a lot more friendly in the countryside than the big cities in general. But I had a great childhood, I'm pleased to say.
Were you an only child, or have you got brothers and sisters?
I'm an only child. Yes, it was just me. My mum said I was enough.
So was it quite a culture shock for you? I mean, you said it was very different. I mean, moving from inner city London, Walthamstow, and then North London, you know, it's fairly hectic, very cosmopolitan, to moving to somewhere like Dorset. As a teenager, was that quite a shift?
Yes, it was. It was a culture shock, I suppose. I mean, going from children living round the corner that you could just literally walk around the corner to each other's houses and play with, to then being in a much prettier village in Dorset. But there was only, I think, maybe two girls who I became friendly with in the village through school. So we used to see each other and hang out together a lot, because everybody else was a car journey away. You know, I had really good friends that were a half an hour drive away. So obviously you're relying on parents, who were very good, by the way, driving us to each other's houses, which was, again, very different to being in London. We didn't do that as much because people tend to live a lot closer. So that was very different.
Were you a dramatic child in the sense that you were always a bit of a performer? I mean, when did you get this bug for wanting to be on the stage?
Yeah, I was doing it all the time. My mum sent me to gymnastics initially because I was always jumping around the furniture and somersaulting over the sofa and things. So sent me to gymnastics so I could learn how to do it properly. And I loved gymnastics, really, really passionate about gymnastics, even now. But I watch it a lot more now than I do it. And the same with acting. I was always putting on shows for my parents and my grandparents. And whenever friends would come over and we'd be playing together, we'd say, right, let's put a show on. And we'd do a song and dance and dress up in silly clothes. And the parents would sit there as an audience. And I think we'd go around the neighbourhood and invite the neighbours to come over and watch as well. So, yes, from a very early age, definitely.
So when you turned 18 and you spent some time travelling and working abroad in bars, I mean, at that stage, did you sort of have a plan as to what you were going to do with your future, or were you just enjoying the freedom of going out and having a go at all sorts of things?
Yeah, I loved travel. I went to Greece on holiday when I was 18 and ended up staying there. And from that moment, I just sort of thought, right, well, because I didn't go to university, I went to college, but not university. So at that stage, I didn't really know where I wanted to be. And once I experienced living abroad and meeting and working with lots of different people, I sort of thought, well, this is fun. And everybody who you were friends with in Greece all said, oh, you know, if you ever come to Dublin, look me up. Or if you ever come to Tenerife, look me up. And everybody, you know, wanted to keep in touch. And I thought, well, I questioned that. I thought, well, I wonder if people mean that. So I went to a phone box and phoned some people who I got on really well with who were from Dublin, and I was still in Greece, and I phoned them and I said, oh, hi, you know, you said I could come and visit. Did you mean it? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, well, is that okay if I come to yours then? And they said, yeah, definitely. So I moved to Dublin for a couple of months and then went to Tenerife and then went back to Greece and kind of hopped about doing different jobs, working in telemarketing or working in cafes or bars or nightclubs just loved the idea of that you could be wherever you wanted to, having that freedom of looking at a map or an atlas and going, I think I might go there.
Yes. It's lovely. When you're that age and I don't think you have the responsibilities, it's absolutely great. You can just say, right, I've just got a globe drop. Perfect. Yeah. Hannah, your fourth piece of music, and why this piece?
There is a group called Pentatonix who have only been around for, I'm not sure, 5 years, something like that. They're from America. There are six of them, and they're a vocal group. And every song they produce, there are no instruments whatsoever. It's only a cappella. So all the noises that you hear sound like drum machines or various different instruments, but it's just their voices. And I think they are so talented and they do a lot of covers. They do their own material as well, but they do a lot of covers. And they did a song with Dolly Parton, or Dolly Parton did a song with them. And it's one of Dolly's songs, Jolene, but they're doing it together. And I think it's brilliant.
He talks about you in his sleep. There's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. I can easily understand how you could easily take my man. You don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can.
Well, you could have your choice of man, but I can never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene.
Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
Hannah Murray is my guest today, sharing her life story in something of a special episode in this lockdown period. Hannah hosts both The Breakfast Show and The Book Show on Talk Radio Europe, runs a weekly quiz, acts and sings locally, and does much more besides. So Hannah, in your early years, you travel quite a lot. You pitched up in different countries and you managed to find work. So what eventually brought you to Spain and why Spain?
Well, I'd been away for 18 months, which was the longest period I'd been away from the UK for. I did a year in Australia on a working visa. That followed. Then I went to New Zealand, 3 months in New Zealand and a month in Thailand. All through my, it sounds like I've got loads of money. I never had. It was all just through money I'd earned working that funded me to keep going, basically. So after that time, I had run out of money after 18 months. So I went back to the UK, went back to live with my parents. I was 22 at the time. And I got a job at Phones for You and worked there for a while. And that was great fun. I really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed sales. I was the only girl in the shop in Poole in Dorset, and I did quite well. I was top salesperson in the Dorset area, beating people in Southampton and Bournemouth, much bigger stores than the one in Poole. Top female salesperson, I think. I don't want to take that away from the guys. But so I really enjoyed that. And then I worked at Wetherspoons for a while as well in Poole. I always loved working in pubs. Think, you know, the social aspect, the chatty aspect that I enjoy, that kind of work. And then my boyfriend at the time, we'd been together for not that long, actually, I think about 6 months, and decided we wanted to move abroad, but didn't know where to. He hadn't done as much traveling as I had. And we just kind of looked at different places that we could go to, how far we could stretch our money, decided that if we drove somewhere instead of flying, then our money would go further. I didn't drive at the time. Listeners will know I only recently last year passed my driving test. So he did all the driving. I was in charge of music, which suited me perfectly. And we just said, why not Spain? We didn't fancy France necessarily. We looked at other countries in Europe and just thought, let's give Spain a go. So drove to Spain and basically hit the coast at sort of Barcelona way, and kept going along the coast, stopping at various places for the night, sussing the place out and thinking, yeah, maybe, not sure, let's keep going. And the first place we got to that we thought, yeah, this seems quite nice, is Puerto Banús. Expensive taste, obviously. I couldn't afford to live there, so slept in the car for a week, and then found an apartment in San Pedro, and have been in and around San Pedro ever since.
So that was obviously with your former boyfriend. And when that relationship disappeared, at any stage did you think, this isn't for me anymore, and I'll go back to the UK? Or have once you got your feet sort of under the table, as it were, in San Pedro, did you just think, this is home, and I love it, and I don't care what happens, this is where I'm staying?
There have been various moments before I met my husband and husband-to-be at the time. There had been moments where I thought, maybe I should go back to the UK. I love London. I have loved London over the years. Obviously, love the theatre, love the restaurants, and have kind of missed that and gone through phases thinking, oh, if I was in London, I could have this amazing life and things like that. But you know, it's expensive, London. I think we all know that. And I haven't, quite frankly, had the money to move to London and see what happens. You know, I always knew that if I did move to London, I'd have to kind of start at the bottom. And you know, you can't really get into radio in London unless you have a relative who works in radio or TV. That seems to be a great way to get into the entertainment industry, if your dad works for the for the BBC or something.
Or you've been on a reality TV program, then I think.
Yeah, exactly. Or your reality TV star. So, yeah, I never moved. I never left. And it was always the right thing to do. I'm so pleased, because then I obviously met my husband-to-be, so I was very thankful that I never left.
And does it feel very much like home? And also, the other question I want to ask you, I mean, being an only child, did your parents find it difficult that you had such itchy feet and you just wanted to leave the UK and go travelling and then ended up settling in Spain?
People would expect that, but absolutely not. It was the opposite, especially from my mum, because my mum used to travel on her own. She used to hitchhike in the 70s around Europe, when it was safer to do it, perhaps, than when I was growing up. So she was really encouraging and supportive. Well, they both were. So they were always very excited for me to be traveling, and bless them, have kind of surprised me and turned up in pretty much every country I've lived in, including on my 21st birthday in Australia, which was incredible.
Time for your fifth piece of music, Hannah. What have you chosen for your fifth piece?
I mentioned the Beatles earlier, grew up listening to the Beatles because my parents were always huge fans, and I love the Beatles, even though they split up 10 years before I was born. And the song that I really wanted to be played when I walked down the aisle to marry my husband, I kept as a little surprise for him, because I thought, for various reasons, the words were quite appropriate. And that was In My Life, the Beatles. And it's that song I wanted to play next. So when my dad was walking me down the aisle, this was the song.
But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one compares with you. And these memories lose their meaning when I think of love.
think about them.
Hannah Murray is my guest this week for a special lockdown life stories. Hannah hosts The Breakfast Show and The Book Show here on Talk Radio Europe. And judging from her other local activities on the Costa del Sol, she rarely has any spare time. Hannah and her husband live in San Pedro de Alcantara. So Hannah, talking about that, I mean, do you actually have time to see your husband?
Yes.
Well, now you do, because you're stuck indoors. Yes.
Yeah, we'd be sick of each other in a few weeks. No, we won't. That won't happen. No, we do. He works sometimes in an office in Guadalmina in the manifesto I mentioned earlier, and sometimes works from home and kind of goes about meeting clients on the coast as well. So he's home a lot more than other people might be. So that's nice. And I obviously am at work very early, but I tend to be home in the afternoons as well. So I think we do actually see more of each other than maybe other couples do who work longer hours. So that's really nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, you are so well established in your corner of Spain. What is it that you love so much about your life here?
Wow. There's so many things. I think it's really easy to take your life, whatever it may be, for granted, I suppose. And we have a lovely little townhouse quite near to the beach. You come out of our house and walk about 2 or 3 minutes and you're at the beach, which is lovely. And love the weather. I mean, the weather's not been particularly great at the moment, but in general, you know, blue skies, and it does make you happy. I don't suffer from SAD, seasonal affective disorder, but I totally get how it can be a thing. You know, when it's gloomy outside, it's very easy to feel a bit gloomy yourself. And I get how hard it must be for some, you know, living in the UK, living in countries where it's raining and grey a lot of the time. I think I have struggled with that over the years, which is why I'm generally a lot happier in Spain with this beautiful climate. And just the outside kind of social aspect as well, how easy it is to kind of meet friends for a drink, for a coffee or a glass of wine or whatever, just outside, either on the beach or just in a local cafe. The outside living, the al fresco living, I really enjoy.
Yeah. Now, I ask my guests this a lot, actually, but how do you consider yourself? Do you consider yourself to be European, British? I mean, where do you fit?
Interesting one. Good question. I'm giving it to you now. Yeah, I think I'm prouder to be European than I am British. There, I've said it. I think all the time that I used to fly back to the UK, it was well over 10 years of living in Spain that I'd always say I'm going home to the UK and I'm flying back to Spain. And then I'm not sure what happened, but it was a good 6, 7 years ago, when I realized that I was saying that I'm going to the UK and coming home to Spain. And as I kind of said it, I thought, oh, I'm not sure I've really said that before. And my parents moved to Spain, amazingly, about 6 years ago. So I really don't go home to the, I don't have a home in the UK. So I whenever I go back to the UK, which is very rarely now, I'll either stay with my husband's parents, if we're going back to see them, or staying with friends, because I my parents, I'm very lucky that they live in Spain now. So Spain is definitely home and has been for quite a while.
Yeah. Are you a forward thinker? I mean, do you have plans for the future, or are you just very much enjoying living in the now?
I'm kind of a bit of both. I think I love the idea of living in the moment and appreciating living in the moment. I think that's a great way to be. But I also love to be excited about the future. And I think it's important to have things to be excited about, even if they don't happen. You know, we're constantly planning holidays that we can't afford to take. But it's exciting, the idea of one day we'll do this, one day we'll go here. And do that. So I like visualizing amazing things in the future, definitely. But in terms of having a set plan, absolutely not. See what happens.
Perfect. Perfect. So where can people find out more about you and your programs on Talk Radio Europe and your other activities?
Yeah, well, I used to have a website years ago, which hasn't been updated, or I don't even think it's online anymore now. So it'd be good to get that up and running again. Maybe now's the time with all this more time to do stuff. So I don't have a personal website, but obviously tre.radio. You can find information about both the breakfast show, which is from 8 till 10 every morning, Monday to Friday, and the book show, which is Wednesday evenings from 7 p.m., repeated on Saturday evenings at 8. And then the quizzes I do, there is a page on Facebook called Hannah's Quiz Night, which keeps people up to date with either the weekly quizzes at the Hogan Stand or various other locations that I might be doing quizzes in. Urban Chai is another place I do quizzes sometimes on a Saturday, another San Pedro establishment. The Plastic Challenge also is online on Facebook. And of course, the San Pedro guide as well. SanPedroMarbella.eu is the website for that.
Fantastic. Time for your final piece of music, Hannah.
I had to pick a Take That song because a big Take That fan. And the first time Take That were together, I was at school in the 90s and I didn't go and see them. And a lot of my friends did. And for years, I was gutted that I couldn't quite understand why I didn't go to see them at the time. And then could not believe my luck that they came to the Gibraltar Music Festival last September. And so we went, my husband and I and various friends went to the festival, and there were some great, great artists on. Really lucky to have them so close to where we live. And Take That with the main act on one of the nights, the first night. And I just couldn't believe it. I was right near the front. We'd been queuing for ages to get right near the front. And I sung along, knew all the words, and cried throughout most of it. It was embarrassing. It was so weird, but it was just magical. So dream come true.
Oh, fantastic. Hannah Murray, thank you so much for being my guest and for sharing your fascinating, rich, filled life story.
Thank you, Ian. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, I can see the future coming to you. Sadness and lies, and I can find a faith in days I've wasted. Been around enough to feel alive, and when the world is broken, hard and cold, no one ever knows the reason why. For the ones we may become, for the battles we have won, for the day we reach the sun, gonna play it loud tonight. In the crowd and the beat of your heart, and I'm already in.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.